meters above me and dwindling. Still, the motion was eerily smooth, even though the vehicle always seemed to be on the point of missing its purchase altogether and plummeting back towards the mulch.
"Hey, mister, you still here?"
At some point during the vehicle's ascent, the rickshaw had returned. I had expected the driver to do what seemed sensible and return to the concourse, more or less in profit, but Juan had kept his word, and would probably have been insulted if I registered any surprise. Did you honestly think I wouldn't be?
"When canopy come down, you never know. Hey, why you stand in rain?"
"Because I'm not returning with you." He had barely had time to register disappointment, although the expression which had begun to form on his face suggested that I'd cast grave aspersions on his entire lineage when I offered him a generous cancellation fee. "It's more than you'd have earned carrying me." He looked at the 2 7 ferris bills glumly.
"Mister, you no wanna stay here, this nowhere, not a good part of mulch."
"I don't doubt it," I said, coming to terms with the idea that even somewhere as misbegotten and miserable as the mulch had its good and bad neighborhoods. Then I said, "The canopy people said they'd send down a cable car for me. It's possible they were lying, of course, but I imagine I'll find out sooner or later. And if they weren't, I'm just going to have to find a way up the inside of one of these buildings."
"This is not good, mister. Canopy, they never do favor."
I decided not to mention the dream fuel. They were probably not willing to rule out the possibility I was who I claimed. What if I was as powerful as I said I was? They wouldn't want to make an enemy of me. Juan shrugged, as if my point was a faint theoretical possibility, but no more than that.
"Mister, I go now. No hurry, stay here, you not coming."
"That's all right," I said, "I understand. And I'm sorry I asked you to wait." That was the end of our relationship, Juan shaking his head, but accepting that there was no way to persuade me otherwise. And then he went, the rickshaw clattering away into the distance, leaving me alone in the rain, genuinely alone this time. The kid was not just around the corner, and I had lost, or more accurately got rid of, the closest thing I had yet found in Chasm City to an ally. It was an odd feeling, but I knew that what I had done was necessary. I waited. Time passed, perhaps half an hour, long enough for me to become aware of the city darkening. As Epsilon Eridani sunk beneath the horizon, its light, already turned sepia by the dome, became the color of ancient blood. What light reached me now had to pass through the tangle of intervening buildings, an ordeal which seemed to sap it of any real enthusiasm for the task of illumination. The towers around me grew dark, until they really did look like enormous trees, and the tangled limbs of the canopy, lit up with habitation, were like branches hung with lanterns and fairy lights. It was both nightmarish and beautiful. Finally, one of those dangling lights detached itself like a falling star, leaving the firmament, growing in intensity as it neared me. As my eyes readjusted to the night, I saw that the light was a descending cable car, and that it was headed for the place where I stood. Oblivious to the rain, I watched, transfixed, as the vehicle slowed and lowered itself almost to street level, the tensioning and detensioning cables singing above me. The vehicle's single headlight panned across the rain-swept road, heightening every crack in the surface, and then swept towards me. Not far from my feet, something made the puddled water jump comically upwards. And then I heard a gunshot. I did what any ex-soldier would do under those circumstances, not stop to consider the situation, or determine the type and caliber.